For over the past year, the Keenest Observer segment on the Jefferson Exchange has brought issues and conversations from folk who may not be seen, but keenly see insightfully into the issues that affect our community, politics, and various identities. We look forward to continuing this work, and in the coming months, you'll experience a deepening of this exploration. We'll be bringing you voices and stories deep within various cultural contexts, voices that use music, arts, politics, and words as their instruments to convey what they observe. Please continue to join us. And in that spirit, I welcome Ashland, Oregon's own Nisha Burton. Nisha Burton is an award-winning filmmaker whose work has been presented at festivals such as the Cannes Film Festival Short Film Corner. Yes, that Cannes Film Festival. And the Ashland Independent Film Festival, among others. Her work centers around race and identity and how growing up in Oregon influenced that construction, among other topics. We'll be talking about her current project, The Separation Myth, Whose Utopia, Exclusion in Oregon, and the role of the storyteller today on The Keenest Observers. In studio, Ms. Nisha Burton, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Most definitely, most definitely. So I said you were an Ashlander, but you have a kind of background. Tell me a little bit about, you know, where you're from and how that kind of made your identity.
Yeah, so I grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico until I was 14 years old. And at that point, my mom and I really wanted to find a place that would have a high school that really supported the arts. And we felt, I was born in California, so we felt like coming back to the West Coast. And we really thought we would go somewhere in California. So we drove all the way up California coast, looked at all of the different cities. And then we had a friend that told us, well, come on up to Ashland, Oregon. It's just a little bit further. And we have the Shakespeare Festival, and I think you'll really like it. And so we did. We followed her advice, and we drove up to Ashland. And once we got here, we really did see that the community and the high school supported the arts so much, and we really liked the programs that they had going on. And so with that whole deciding process, we decided to come here to Ashland, Oregon. And going to high school here, I did find a lot of support in all of the arts, and then pretty much by my sophomore year, I really found filmmaking as my passion. And so I started that from that point on. And the community really supported me through having, I would submit my films to the Ashland Film Festival, and the first launch program that they had, one of my films won in that. So that was like a big boost of confidence in my filmmaking. And on from there, I just continued to love it.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge thing to, one, identify your interest set. But then once you do identify it and you work, you get some sort of, you know, you get some accolade or some like reinforcement.
Exactly.
That's a huge thing to continue.
Yeah.
So do you even recall the name of that film? It was so long ago.
The first film that was in the Ashland Film Festival launch program was called Luck. And it was filmed all from the perspective of feet. And so every summer I would go down to Idlewild, California, which is a little bit outside of L.A., and there was a great program there where all of the L.A. filmmakers would come up and help young people to start making films that were really a high production value quality. So I made that film there and then came back here and showed it. And it was, the film was basically about this person finding their passions and then being able to transform their life. And it was a short film through finding their passions.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. Like, I saw Luck. I checked it out, and you can see a lot of Nisha's work on nishaburton.com. Yes?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You can see, that's a very interesting perspective, watching the feet, and most definitely seeing what it is to have a preconception of what you may think is your passion, mm-hmm. but then to have, you know, something in the world help you find, oh, there may be something else that may be very interesting to me.
Exactly.
It's a really cool piece. It's a
Thank
really cool
you.
Piece, yeah. So I love the fact that you talked about a very intentional search mm-hmm. that you and your mother did to find place.
Yes.
I think that's, you know, we're going to talk about place in a while in terms of your work. I think that what I find is that your work really deals with place and the influence of place on people.
Mm-hmm.
But can you tell me, was it that intentional? Did you all, you know, you said you drove up I-5, I'm guessing, you know, to find place.
Yes.
What about Ashland grounded place for you all?
That's a great question. Yeah, because, you know, in our journey, we did see so many different places, and we really were looking for a home base. And so I think what it was about Ashland was really the feeling of the community. And there was a lot of vibrancy going on when we got here. There was fire spinning in the downtown at night. There was like really cool stuff going on. And it felt, and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and it felt like a community that really supported the arts and also, yeah, cared about each other, a very friendly place. So that's kind of what drew us here.
Right. And then in your work, though, you start kind of talking about, though, how this place then started maybe a questioning or, you know, of your own identity because of you being who you are and how you identify, which I should ask you to, you know, how do you identify as a person in the world? Because I think that influences definitely your work and your point of view. So
totally.
That?
Yeah. So I identify as multi-ethnic because I have a lot of different combinations of origin in me. And so African-American, Cherokee Choctaw Santee, and then Irish Scottish Welsh. And so that combination I talk about in my films. A big question that I always got was, what are you? And so really that reclaiming of my various identities and then being able to tell people has been a big tool for me to explore my identity and to also say, okay, well, if I'm going to be asked that every moment of my life, this is my answer.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. We have a few seconds left in this segment. I'd love to see how that originated, like where the questions, how did that happen in high school, college, and then how did it concretize for you to be able to say, hey, this is a way I'm going to use my aesthetic to explore, you know, for, you know, people and people kind. We'll talk about that on, you know, after the break. I'm joined with Nisha Burton today. Who's a filmmaker from Ashland, Oregon, and we're talking about her work around race and identity. Stay with us after a short break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin, and we're talking with local filmmaker Nisha Burton about her latest project, The Separation Myth, which we'll get into in a second. You're welcome to join this conversation. Call us at 800-838-3760 or email comments and questions to jx@jeffnet.org. So, Nisha, we were about to get into the beginnings of your aesthetic. Right. And that came from some interesting experiences here in Ashland, Oregon, and Oregon at large, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So being here and like we talked about moving here and being in the Ashland community, I think that it became pretty clear pretty quickly that, you know, as a person of color, there weren't very many other people like me in Ashland, especially when I was going to high school here, which was about 14 years ago now, so a little while ago. And so when I was in high school, I was in a teen theater program, and for the Martin Luther King Day event, I believe it was my junior or senior year, I did a whole skit that was called Being Brown in a White Town. Uh-huh. And it was really exploring what it was like to be a person of color and not have too much of that around me. And some of the things that it touched on were just the experience of like we were talking about, being asked what are you all the time, or questions that clearly were, you know, not mean-spirited necessarily, but just felt very othering to me, because it's like, well, you don't fit in this box. It was all about, like, pick a box. Mm. You don't fit in this box. We don't really know how to categorize you, so where do you fit? What are you? And then the other thing that it touched on was also, like, if there ever were moments where people were saying jokes about race or whatever, I had to be the person that bared that. Like, they would all laugh and then look at me and be like, is that okay?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I had to either be the person that was, like, the downer of, like, no, that's not okay, or be like, haha, yeah, that's fine, you know? And so, yeah, it's an interesting experience to have grown up here, and like then also a lot of what I would see is people would be like, oh, it's interesting that Oregon is this way, it must just be a coincidence, or people didn't make it up here and stuff like that. So that's what I thought too in high school. I really didn't learn the history of Oregon in a more in-depth way, as far as the Constitution and the laws that were set in place to exclude people of color. And so then it wasn't until college that I started to learn more about the history of Oregon and really dive into that. And then it all made so much more sense about my experience here and about why there weren't more people of color here, and why I did feel a bit isolated in that way.
Right. And I think, you know, people don't know the specific history and the intentionality mm-hmm. of exclusion. And that's the reason why, you know, even years later, you know, folks of color are slow to migrate here. And, you know, the percentages are so very low, which we, you know, and I don't want to, you know, make it a given that there's, you know, anywhere from very low 1-3% people of color, depending on, you know, the stratification of ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel it
as
a person of color, for sure. But I love the fact that you then started expressing it and dealing with it via the art form.
Mm-hmm.
The Self in Four is, you know, one of those pieces. And was that a piece that you did in college?
Yes. Yeah, it was a piece that I started exploring, like you're talking about, the different identities and, exploring that combination.
Yeah, there's a piece for everyone, and I really encourage you all to go to nishaburton.com to see the work, and we're going to play some clips in a second in some of the work. But you literally ask people, you know, off the cuff to, you know, write on Post-it notes what they believe your ethnicity is.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have all of these Post-its
on
you as the piece, you know, kind of goes on.
Exactly.
How was that? I mean, that was an interesting view.
Yeah, it was kind of like a continuation of the exploration that I started with the theater piece I was telling you about, where I had talking about these boxes that people were trying to put me in. And so then with that other piece, it was really scary and vulnerable to, you know, kind of give it over to the hands of strangers. And I just walked up on the Oregon campus to all of these people. I didn't know any of them. And I asked them this question, like, okay, if I'm going to be labeled, let's do it in a really physical way and let's show it. And also then exploring how the idea of race really is a cultural construction. And so what people see you as and label you as really is kind of informed by culture and informed by the society that we're in. And so it was interesting to see what a large variation of Post-it notes I got were as well, mm-hmm. and kind of, explore it in a very physical way. Identity.
And, right. And this is at the University of Oregon,
yes.
the flagship institution of the state, right?
Yes.
In Eugene,
yes.
Which has an interesting, you know, history as well in terms of, you know, how it dealt with people of color,
mm-hmm.
Which you explore in another,
yes.
you know, film that you have called
Finding Home at the MIMS. Yeah.
It's very interesting. And that piece is about a dedicated house that community, an African-American couple founded during the time when folk couldn't find housing. And so that their house, they ultimately acquired a house, and it became a space for folk to stay as they went up and down the I-5. Entertainers,
mm-hmm.
College students,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera. It's interesting. My family did the same thing.
Oh, wow.
In Illinois. So this was a thing
awesome.
across the country and across, you know, time.
Yeah.
Because as a reflection of segregation.
Yeah, exactly. And in the film too, it just touches on, but that there were the green books that
were
the guides. Wow,
they were so amazing.
Yeah, that helped people of color to find places that were safe places to stay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you're saying, the Oregon is a little, you know, it's a section of what happened, but really it's a broader story of the history of all of the United States.
And literally these are published books. So you'll see this in the film that they're called the Green Books.
Mm-hmm.
And they were literal resource books to know where to stay, where to even, where you could get accommodation, period.
Exactly.
That existed during that time. Very interesting piece. I want to speak to your aesthetic in a second. I'm going to play this clip that kind of gets into the separation myth, the series that you're currently working on. But I must say to the audience, please go check out the work, because your style and aesthetic is really, really sensory.
Mm.
It's sensorial, right? It's a mosaic. You say that it's very poetic and I say it's lyrical and mosaic, because you use everything that the senses have to offer to be able to convey message and story point.
Mm.
And that,
thank
it's
you.
Incredible. Yeah, you're welcome. It's, you know, the from the thing moves. You move the image and you consequently move the story. How did you come up with that, you know, aesthetic choice?
Yeah, well, I was in college. I was really grateful to go to the University of Oregon. First, I went to Bard College and then I transferred over. But there is where I really developed my aesthetic, and I found myself more and more drawn to this collage style and to bringing together different elements. And from the beginning, what I loved about film so much was that it did bring all of the various art forms, because I always knew I loved art, but it brought music, visual arts, and poetry and sound all together into one space. And so that's what I continued to explore and develop in my aesthetic. And since I studied digital arts, I was able to not only have a straight film foundation, but bring in animation and bring in special effects and all of these things that I think adds an element of magical realism, which I really like.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to find a way. Exactly. It is magical realism. And it is, I can totally tell the influence of your digital media background, because
mm-hmm.
you're very intentional about the use of image, the use of music,
mm-hmm.
for sure,
mm-hmm.
and how words can then be explored through the imagination and form.
Yeah.
And it's very evocative and very, very effective. I'm a fan. before I guess we have to talk about the cons thing, because that's a huge thing for someone, you know, at the upswing of their career to have, you know, a film that, you know, is accepted into a cons category at all. How did that happen?
So that happened through when I was in college still. My last year, I knew that I wanted to go to one of the bigger film festivals out there and see what it was like and see what that whole world was like. And so I applied for this internship over there, and they suggested, you know, submit your film, see what happens. But the internship itself, too, is a whole piece of it. And so I submitted my film, and I couldn't believe it that it got in. And it was in the short film corner marketplace. And so, again, like I was saying with the Ashland Film Festival, having one of my short films get to that place was another just big affirmation that I was on the right path,
mm-hmm.
and that I was really, like, my passion was lining up with being received in the world and people wanting to see it and wanting to see what I was producing. And so my experience over there was amazing, and it really gave me insight into the film world in a bigger way, because that film festival specifically is a giant marketplace. So it both shows, you know, the creative aspect, but then also really the distribution channels and how to do the business side of film and how to get your pieces out there in a big way. And so having that knowledge, and then the next year I went and did an internship at the Sundance Film Festival and got into that. So to see these big marketplaces of where films are being seen and distributed and all of that, really, yeah, it was a really great next step for my film career and for understanding, because you can be an artist and you can make your art, but then to actually get it out there in front of people is the biggest part of it.
It's huge.
And so to see the avenues that are available for that was really important.
And yeah, I'm totally in agreement.
Yeah.
And that film was called Picture This, yes, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so that one is also online on my website. And yeah, that was a film that I made, short film as well. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
We're talking to Nisha Burton, filmmaker and Ashland resident. We're going to hear a clip from the current project that you're mm-hmm. working on, it because it is... You know, it goes on. There are a series of films that you're doing,
yes.
And it's called The Separation Myth. Let's play that clip.
Once upon a time, there was a girl. She woke up in a strange land where she was constantly being asked the question, "What are you?" This question put her on the outside. It made her have to start seeing things that others could ignore. In the media, history, everywhere. She could tell that there was more buried beneath the story she was being told. She sensed that the past was hanging on. So she decided to explore the untaught histories, how they affected the present, and what could be done to heal. She sensed there was something beyond the current perceptions, a new story waiting to be written. So we can end the separation myth.
So, what is the separation myth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, the title for this series came to me really looking at these myths of separation and that people can be kept separate. And so, with this first piece that you just listened to, the intro of it, it was looking at the myths that have been told both around Oregon, like we were talking about earlier, about, oh, it's just a coincidence that Oregon's demographics are the way they are and whatnot, and also the underlying myth that Oregon could be kept as a separate state, as a state that some ways they've put it was a white utopia, you know, a place where there would only be white people allowed. Because from the very beginning of the history of the United States, this myth started to form that there was race, that there was separation, and that there was, you know, a group that was us and there a group that was them, and that group has, or that myth has continued, but really from the very beginning it's all been woven together, and communities have come in and out of each other's lives, and it's never been this separate thing. And so the series that I'm working on in the broader sense is looking at different spaces and how these myths have been constructed and what the repercussions of those stories have been, you know, from the Deep South to Oregon to all around, and then specifically here in Oregon, looking at how the history then informs the current times and then, makes people that don't fit into the group of us feel in these spaces, and what we can do. Really, the goal is to look at how, by learning these histories, what we can do to move forward instead of just sweeping it under the rug and being like, oh, that didn't happen, and, you know, it's all good. Let's talk about these histories that are harder to talk about and really bring healing through that and through starting these conversations.
So in the hope of starting conversations to be able to bridge the gaps.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't with my pieces, you know, I don't want to just bring up all of the issues or the hard things and then leave it at that and be like, yeah, this is the way it is. That's too bad. But really, let's have conversations and let's find ways that we can continue to, like, here specifically in Oregon, to make it a more inclusive place and to really acknowledge that history happened and then say, but that's not what we want as our current story, and we want to move forward from here.
So you have the piece that is the Oregon history, mm-hmm. and the issues of Oregon in present, and the ability to, and how, what the steps can be to heal.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next space that the separation myth stories will kind of, you know, take on? Where are you going, and what are those, you know, are they comparable issues?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So with kind of the Oregon piece, a part of what I'm going to be doing is also looking, the first exclusion in Oregon, whose utopia is kind of a broad stroke of everything that's happened here, or a lot of things that have happened here. And then with the Mims House piece, that's looking at a more specific in Eugene, Oregon, what happened there. And so I both want to continue in Oregon to look at more specific stories. And then, yeah, go to other places, like even where I grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico, it has its own complete story of how different cultures and communities came together, and a lot of tension was formed because of how it all came together with the various tribes that were living there, the Spaniards, and then the white Europeans, and that can still really be felt in New Mexico too, and there's a lot of racial tensions and divides there as well. And so, looking at that place, looking in California, and then I have a lot of family that lives in the southern states too. So looking at the South and looking at how each story is a little bit different, mm-hmm. like the way it's all come together is different state by state.
Yeah, and we're gonna talk. We'll talk about that more on the break after the break. I'm Robert Goodwin. We're talking with Nisha Burton, and we're talking about her project, The Separation Myths. It's a consecutive set of stories exploring race and the issues in Oregon and beyond. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are back with the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin. Our guest is Nisha Burton, and we're talking about her project, The Separation Myth, Whose Utopia? Exclusion in Oregon. Nisha is a filmmaker, and we're talking about issues of inclusion. You're welcome to join the conversation. Call us at 800-838-3760 or email comments and questions to jx@jeffnet.org. So, we were talking about where the separation myth is going to head, but what I didn't do well is talk about what it is in terms of its construct right now in exploring Oregon. There are two pieces. There's the separation myth, Whose Utopia? And then the next piece is the piece about the Mims House. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, help me out, because yeah. I think I missed that part.
Totally, yeah. So, I mean, it's, and the projects are standalone with themselves, two short films. And then, so this next piece about the Mims House was also a piece of the Oregon Humanities Project, This Land, mm-hmm. where they were exploring similar subject matter of the history of Oregon and then how different communities of color have been able to put roots into this land despite the various laws and regulations that were trying to stop them from doing so. And so we spoke a little bit about the Mims House and how it was a place that was established to be able to house and board people that were both passing through Oregon, famous musicians that were brought to play music and entertain the community, but not allowed to stay anywhere mm-hmm. in Eugene. And then also University of Oregon athletes who were brought to play for the University of Oregon and yet not allowed to live on the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so that project is looking at a more specific place in Oregon. And then the other piece that's on that website, theseparationmyth.com, which is related to this kind of broader exploration, is called The Walls We Create, and that's about a mural that happened here in Ashland, Oregon, and it happened with our sister city of Guanajuato, Mexico, right when all of the conversation about building a wall between the United States and Mexico was going on. And so this was looking at, well, what if we used art and what if we created a different type of wall that was with our sister city and that was bringing us together rather than dividing us?
Yeah, we have a clip of that piece. Let's hear that.
I actually got involved through, it was actually completely random, because Phil Ortega, he used to be my soccer coach. And I was over buying spray cans at a local art store. And I kind of spun around, and I was a little scared, because he's like, hey, what are those spray cans for? And I was like, oh, no, like, they're for my room, you know? But he's like, no, like, he started talking about life art. It's over in downtown Medford. It's kind of like an art-based mentorship program that had its roots in suicide and depression prevention. And he went in detail about how there's a lot of graffiti artists there and a lot of people who put, like, their artwork there. And I started going little by little, and I got more involved, and he actually offered me a job after a while. If I hadn't seen him at the art store, I probably wouldn't have taken, like, the best path so far. But I'm here now, and through that, it's the reason I'm working here, too, which is nice.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's such a beautiful, like, juxtaposition to the, you know, the political messages of the time. And again, check this film out as well. It's such a great, I think, example of your particular aesthetic and how effective it is. Mm. And you can hear that in the music, most definitely, and how the music parallels what we hear in terms of the speaker. But if you then, folks, look at the visual, you know, it's very compelling, very compelling.
Yeah, it was a fun piece to work on because it was such a vibrant mural itself and so much color and vibrancy that then filming it and finding the angles to film it from and, like you're saying, picking the music, because music is a huge piece of filmmaking too, picking the music that would then move the story as well as the different sections from the interviews, and really showing how the story is about the Ashland community coming together. All different people came together to be a part of that mural creation, and kind of the message is, you know, when we come together, we can make beautiful things, and so we need to be doing that more rather than separating.
Right. And you see the mural creation in that piece, which is a beautiful thing. And just so folks know, if you're in the area, the mural is on the backside of Sesame Restaurant, that's over in the square, right behind the creek. And I wish I had that address in mind, but I don't. But you can see it on the back. And I've walked by that building and it, you know, a bajillion times and never knew this story. And it was really cool to hear, you know, how that mural got on that wall.
Yeah, definitely. At the beginning stages of when the mural was going to be done, I was approached to document it, and it was fun to be in it from the beginning and see it go up on that wall, and also see how then through the art it really engaged the community to come by. As people were walking by, everybody's like, oh, what is this? What's going on? And so it's just that, yeah, next affirmation of how art can really engage people, which is what I love about film too, because dealing with these harder subject matters, sometimes people want to shy away from them or not talk about them, or it can feel like it can get defensive or scary to talk about these things. But through art, through filmmaking especially, it has such potential to reach people on a heart level and share the stories that really connect us all. So then we can approach these harder things to talk about, not from a place of fear, but from a place of love.
Mm-hmm. We call it over at the festival in the programming that I steward, heart-provoking and thought-provoking. So that address is 21 Winburn Way. It's behind, it's on the back wall of Sesame Restaurant, in a very picturesque walk between a creek and some wall area. You talk about... in your personal philosophy on your website, you say, I'm a storyteller. I strive to make films that challenge the audience and make them have to think long after leaving the theater. Why is that your philosophy?
Yeah, I think it's really important both to the storyteller piece because, you know, when you're getting the interviews and you're collecting everything together, it can happen that it's a bit of a mishmash and you're like, ah, where am I going? But having a theme and an idea in mind and really telling it as a story, because there are these archetypal human stories and these narratives of like the hero's journey, so to speak, that connects us all. And so to touch on those stories and to have that format really helps people to engage. And then that's always with films, the ones that I've been the most drawn to were the ones that made me think after I got out of theater, not the ones that were just passive entertainment where it's like, oh, that was great, I'm glad I went to see the movie, now I'm going on with my day, but the ones that stuck with me and made me have to continue to talk about them and examine them and pull them apart long after I left the theater. So that's really what I have strove to do as well, is to create films that make people have to maybe question things that they hadn't thought about or were thinking about in a different way. And to, yeah, like we've been saying, but to begin these conversations with people is really the goal, because once those conversations start, then the ball can get rolling on all different directions, but it takes that inciting point of feeling moved by something and feeling like, oh, I never thought of it that way, to then move forward.
We're talking with Nisha Burton, a filmmaker, about the storytelling process and her work. I want to ask you a question, talking about boxes. Do you consider yourself a documentary filmmaker?
That's a great question. No boxes for me at all. I don't consider myself just a documentary filmmaker, although over these past few years, the main films that I've been making have been documentaries. And I love, even in the documentary format, kind of exploring the edges of where I can go with it. And so incorporating some narrative elements or some collage elements, animation elements. So no matter what, I feel like I'm always pushing the boxes a little bit. And then also, like we were saying earlier, what I started with were narrative short films. And so that's, narrative pieces are also something that I'm very passionate about. And when I went to college in New York at Bard College, their big thing was experimental film. So I really got to explore in that world as well and get the feel for what, you know, pushing the box completely open and seeing how far I could go with it felt like. And so I think, yeah, I think that the cross-genre approach and pushing outside of the edges of what we consider a documentary or a narrative film or experimental film is really fun, because then you get to new places that maybe you wouldn't have arrived otherwise.
I think, you know, we're definitely in the arts, you know, getting to that place where the effective storytelling is going to be the storytelling that is multidisciplinary and intersectional, that uses all of the forms, you know, to be able to, like, you know, move folk and to be able to convey message in a very intentional way. Again, here's the time for plugs again, nishaburton.com, to see the a lot of the narrative work, right? And then the Separation Myths, theseparationmyth.com as well has its own intentional website.
And there's one more website too, Sparrowhawk Media Arts, which has some other films of mine as well.
And that's another thing. And one of the things that we, you know, we talk about in terms of, and again, I think that this is important, you know, as we explore what it is to be not only content creators, but also content consumers, is to have a really well-formed way that you express the form, not only as artist and storyteller, but also as, you know, business person slash entrepreneur. And you have a very strong construct. I hasten to use the word brand because I think that's thrown around a lot. But you work from all of those constructs. Can you tell me what that is for you and how you came about, you know, kind of, you know, putting yourself in that place?
Definitely, yeah. So, you know, studying digital arts and filmmaking, then it's a matter of, well, what am I going to do with this, both for my creative work as well as for my business work. And one other website, if you want to know it, is reflective.design. Reflective Brands is my company name. And so we create websites, graphic design, video production for companies and people all over the Oregon area and beyond. And it's really fun because I love and I'm so passionate about every avenue of what I do. And it's all creation. It's all creative. And I feel really lucky as somebody who, you know, came out of college. A lot of people struggle with, what do I do now? But to get to continue to do my art, whether it be for other people and helping their vision reach the world or for myself and getting my creative pieces out there, but really, there's not a distinction. It's all me creating my art and putting my special view from the experiences that I've had and from the various art forms that I've explored into whatever piece I do. So I feel very passionate about everything that I'm doing and just love all of the avenues that I could express myself through.
Yeah, it's the way that I most definitely, you know, help to steward folks who are deciding to kind of be on this particular creative path, mm-hmm. or in general, that being able to kind of decide how to connect the artistic path with, you know, any other path, mm-hmm. is integral, especially
exactly.
if it is, you know, then finding a way to like keep yourself afloat.
Yeah.
You know, being able to be very intentional about what those things can be is a part of your identification. And I think it's so beautiful that you identified that very early. I am this, and this is what I'm interested
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another huge piece as well.
Yeah,
to being able to identify that is a huge thing.
Yeah, and I think it's such a gift too, how, you know, my work that I do with my business then supports my art, and it's all my creative work. But being able to do the branding work, then it gives me the ability and freedom to create the type of documentaries and content that I want to make. Whereas if I was just trying to make it in Hollywood as a filmmaker, it's limiting
yeah.
what you get to do. And
yeah.
so to have that openness and that flexibility has really enabled me to then explore exactly what I want to explore in
right
my
on.
Films.
Right on. Nisha Burton, thanks for joining us here today.